You're listening to Win-Win, an entrepreneurial community with your host, Ben Wolf.
And welcome to the Win-Win podcast, the official podcast of Wolf's Edge Integrators, Fractional COO Company. Welcome to the episode. We are going to be learning from our guest today how to get startup talent and equity without the risk with our guest today. And we'll explain more what that even means and how, what on earth we are even talking about in just a moment. But I want to, first of all, share, obviously, if you are a startup, if you are a business owner, even not of a startup, I would like to share some resources from the Wolf's Edge Integrators toolbox, which you could find at, you know, and implement yourself without working with us, even at wolfsedgeintegrators.com/resources. That's wolfsedgeintegrators.com/resources. And there are several resources there, including very prominently a roadmap tool that is a simplified version of the tool that our COOs use with our clients to use to help chart a path from where you are now to where you want to be and what the business should look like, with a video guide and instructions. So that's very useful to you. There's an assessment to assess your team. There's a chapter from my book, Fractional Leadership, Landing Executive Talent You Thought Was Out of Reach, that you can get for free. And one more resource. So again, wolfsedgeintegrators.com/resources. Some very good tools for business owners to use there. And with that, I want to get into introducing our guest today. He is the co-founder and CEO of Maven, which provides business advisory and business development coaching for fractional executives. He is a past guest on this show talking about that topic, but we're going to be talking about a very different topic today. As I introduce Jay Kingley, you can find out more about him and his company and his services at referabilitymaven.com. That's referabilitymaven.com. And welcome, Jay. Good to have you back.
Oh, it's terrific to be here, Ben. Thank you.
I do appreciate it. And because we are talking, some people may have already watched or listened to your previous episode about business development, but talking here about getting talent for startups, getting involved in startups, and having equity, but without as much risk on the fractional executives or the fractional leaders side on this topic, very different topic. So what, if you could just give me a quick 2-minute background and history on yourself and sort of how we got to be talking about this very interesting and novel model today.
So I'm going to date myself a little bit, Ben. 1993, I did my first venture-backed startup as a principal. We raised, for the time, a considerable sum of money, and it was a technology telephony play. And one of the issues as the founder team was, here we were in the early days, and we had a certain amount of funds, and we knew where we wanted to get to, which was to be an enterprise. And how did we get from A to B? Well, we knew we needed talent that we didn't have. So we, in our recruiting efforts, would reach out and talk to folks and who had that experience, who had the expertise and capability, and they all turned us down. And the reason was, they said, you're too small, you're too underdeveloped. We come in not when you're a $10 million company, we come in when you're a $100 million company. And as founders, we said to ourselves, well, how the heck are we ever going to get from 10 to 100 if we don't have the right talent? And we sort of came up with this view, a little military analogy of going through no man's land as quickly as you can, hoping you weren't going to get killed in the process because you were under-resourced from a talent point of view. Fractionals didn't exist. So that has stayed with me for 30-some years as a big problem. And then as the fractional movement has really taken off, of course, a lot of fractionals, new fractional, established fractionals, want to work with established companies. But increasingly, we see that fractionals are looking to work with startups. And part of what drives them is when they look at a startup compared to an established company, they say the bureaucracy is a lot less. I can have a truly measurable impact. There's no politics. I get to do a broader range of activities because it's the delivery that counts. It's about a higher level of energy and excitement. It is about asking for forgiveness, not permission. And there are no politics, or at least not nearly as much as what you would see in the corporate world. So a lot of them have this interest, but the biggest issue they have is they say, how do we get paid? Because by definition, if you're in this, if you're a company in this area, you are running at a cash flow deficit. You are deliberately cash flow negative, looking to make up the gap by raising investor capital. So you've got to be careful about what you spend your money on. And that is really what led to us thinking about this problem of all these fractionals that want to work with startups, but didn't have an economic model that worked for the fractional.
So let's talk about that problem side of that a little more, right? People want that experienced fractional leader, right? You don't need the full time yet at this stage, but they want that experienced fractional leader. But they may not be able to afford to pay them at their market rate of what someone of that caliber and experience is worth. So they may want to offer them a piece of the pie, offer them some equity, but many people are still probably going to turn that down. Why is that?
So you hit the issue on the head. As a fractional executive, you are coming in to be part of the C-suite of this startup capital, now a company. So imagine they needed you full time. They would say, what is your fair market rate? And that's going to be set by the corporate world, you know, that alternative. And the startups would all say, well, we're not going to pay you that in cash. We're going to take a big cash discount, but we are going to offer you upside. And if we are successful, that upside will more than compensate you for the discount that you take. So that's how they think about it. But a lot of fractionals are coming in and saying, but this is the rate that I want. And even though you don't pay for me full time, it is still a model that doesn't fit with what the startups have. Now, what is the conundrum here? So let's look at the returns that you can expect from the upside. Now, I'm going to look at the universe of venture-funded startups, which is anywhere 1.5%, 2% of all startups out there. And these are professionals that are really good at screening. So we are now talking about the best of the best. And here's some data which I think is fascinating. For a venture capitalist investing in an early stage company, there is a 50% chance that that company is going to go bust. There's another about 15% chance, so we're about up to two-thirds, where the return on investment is going to be less than what was invested. So if I'm an investor and I invest $100, I'm going to get $50 back. That's not particularly good. And then you've got one-third of an opportunity to actually make a positive return. The most common return that you'll see, you know, maybe about 25% of the time, is a 3x return. So I invest 100, I get 300 back, but I'm doing this over a period of 5 to 7 years before I'm going to see that liquidity. And then when you get to the ones that make the press, the paper, you know, it's probably a 10th of a percent of a portfolio that is a grand slam, that is the next Google, Salesforce, Facebook, that's out there. So there's this big asymmetry in returns. Now, when you're an entrepreneur, you're taking that extraordinary risk because you got one shot. And the problem is that an entrepreneur who was totally rational would never, ever start a business. Because when you look at the likelihood of outcomes, it is overwhelming. You're going to lose. So these entrepreneurs, you know, we're all crazy people. We've got this vision that we can change the world and it's our lot in life and all that great stuff that keeps them going. But now you're a fraction, say second act. You spent a lot of your career in corporate. You're not ready to call it a day. But you want to get that excitement, that jazz of working with the startup. But your compensation, even if you are savvy enough to negotiate the upside, just like you would if you were a full-time executive,
right. But what are the chances that that's going to be worth anything?
Right. It's overwhelmingly likely to be bust. Now, when you're 25 or 30, you can easily recover from that. But when you're second act, you may only have 10, 15 years left in your career. Like, it's the wrong stage of life to be taking that risk. And so this is the conundrum that right. we set out to solve.
Right. Very fascinating. So what's the model? What's the model that you've come up with to address? So the business owner or the startup founder, not able to get the people that they want, because most of them are going to say, you know what, vast majority chance that whatever I get paid as equity or upside is going to be worthless. And, right. You know, maybe pay me a portion of the fee, but that in the end, that's all I'm going to get is whatever cash you ended up paying me. And a lot of people can't do that or can't afford to do that or don't want to take that level of risk. Right. So then that founder is now stuck with a very much hamstrung in their ability to get the right people, you know, on board at the beginning. So what's this model? What's the solution? How do we get out of this conundrum?
So our concept is that you act like a venture capitalist in managing your fractional business and as an entrepreneur when it comes to working with your clients. So let me explain what I mean by that. So one of the things that struck me as we were thinking about this problem is I've gone through what it looks like from the entrepreneurial side, from being part of that senior team. But I have also in my career been on the investor side. And every professional investor creates a portfolio. And they have a very different attitude. They expect half of their investments to go bust. I talked with an entrepreneur the other day, and a great guy, smart guy, but they just couldn't quite make it. And he said to me, what do I do now? And he is beside himself, not just because he's not earning a return, not just on the money he put in, but on all, but he invested 2 years of his life, zero. But he's worried about the investors. And I said to him, relax, because they're relaxed. They knew there was a 50% chance of you going bust. Be honest, be open, admit it, talk about what you've learned. They'll be fine. You've got to be fine. So the venture capitalist is thinking about this so differently. And why do they think about it differently? Because they have a portfolio. They are not putting all their eggs in one basket. So even as savvy as they are in picking winners and losers, as we talked about, 2/3 of the time, they're losing money. So the only way that you can deal with that is through creating a portfolio. So we took some data that is out there from the venture capital world in terms of portfolio returns, and we did some modeling. And when you look at the ROI, when you're down at that one investment, and then even when you get to 10 investments, your expected return is about 6 to 8-fold higher if you have a portfolio of 10 investments compared to just having one investment. And then it gradually increases, and even larger portfolios, say 20 or more, the ROI goes way up because now one of those grand slams is likely to hit. But even at a smaller level, say 10 to 12 in your portfolio, the risk is so dramatically lower and you will earn a really nice return. You may not be Bill Gates or Mark Zuckerberg, but I'll give you an example. So there's a guy that I've spent some time with, and he's done this model. He's a fractional CFO. And he had a little portfolio and one hit, not crazy hit, but enough of a return to him that he made seven figures. It was enough for him to move the family to a nicer house, get a new car, take some nice vacations, put all the money he needed away to pay for his kids' college. But of all the things that he's done, and he's probably has a portfolio about 6-7 clients,
mm-hmm.
only one hit.
Right.
Everyone else, nothing.
How does that work? I mean, one person, let's say with my own clients, I can only do a couple at a time. How would that work? How can I get 10 clients in a portfolio? I'm one person. So how does that work?
Right. So you've hit it correctly, right? Which is, if you're just one person, you're not going to be able to get a portfolio that's big enough to give you a venture capitalist like risk return trade-off. So what we do is we help put together a group of 3 to 5 fractions. And what they do with our help is we set up a risk pool. So what each of them do is they contribute the upside portion of their compensation into this pool, and the pool issues them shares that reflect the ownership. So this is not a socialist view. It's a very capitalist view. The more upside I put in, the more shares in the portfolio that I have. So
whatever the valuation was
at the time,
getting the compensation.
Exactly. Right. That's how it's valued, and the pool issues shares. This is very much like a 1031 exchange conceptually.
Mm-hmm.
And for those in our audience who may not be familiar with 1031, this is often done in commercial real estate, where same basic idea that individual properties are very risky, but if you pool them, you're likely to have good returns. So they set up these 1031 exchanges where real estate owners contribute their real estate in return for shares in the broader pool. And they can share that shared upside at a much lower risk, which gives them much more attractive finish. So it's a very similar type of concept. So Everyone in this group of 3 to 5 contributes the upside. The cash stays with them, right?
The cash portion, right.
The cash portion goes to them because they're the ones doing the work. But they get together and we create this pool. They are each managing members of the pool. We typically serve as a non-executive chairman so that we manage it for them without having an actual vote. And when one of the investments liquidates, it gets paid out a la dividend.
Proportionally.
In proportion to everyone's relative ownership shares. So that is a little bit of the mechanics of how you do it. But we've assumed that on average, a fractional will have 3 to 4 clients in a year. So if we can get at least 3 of them in, we'll hit about 10 to 12. We can go up to 5. We don't want it to be too unwieldy, right? And that will push it up. And then over the course of a year, 2 or 3, you're probably having a portfolio that grows to be about 20 clients. And now you look exactly like a venture capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the nuance. See, the venture capitalist invests money to create the portfolio. The fractional invests time.
Right.
But it's still a currency. So if you abstract money, time, there's sort of an equivalence there. Let's take a model that's proven, tried and true, which is the venture capital model, because they tend to do a whole lot better than the entrepreneurs do. And here, though, the fractionals converting the time they're investing, not discounting their compensation. Yes, they will take less cash, but there's no discounting. The difference between their fair market rate and the cash that they're getting is in this form of upside.
Right.
Which can be in many different formats, but you can think of it broadly like a deferred compensation. And that is what gets contributed to the pool so that we can dramatically lower the risk and increase the expected return to all the people who participate in the pool.
Typically, if let's say a particular fractional executive has a rate of $10,000 a month, let's just say, and they get paid in cash $5,000 a month, and there's $5,000 a month that they're going to get paid in equity. What's the, I don't know, it's the multiple or like what's the add-on typically for what it's, I guess, for the value of the company that they're getting for that $5,000 a month of labor?
So in the work that we've done and the models we've created based on real experiences that people have had, a typical fractional participates like this will get 2.5 to 3x in terms of that upside turning into cash compared to the cash that they got.
Are you talking about at the end if there's a liquidity event or just the value of the input?
So the value of the input should be market rates, right?
So if my market rate, there's no upside on that. I mean, it's 5,000 worth of equity.
So if my market rate is 10 grand a month, then I'm taking 5 in cash, 5 in upside. So I have to live on the 5 in cash, right? The upside goes into this pool. This pool will have various liquidity events. Now, in some, like half the time, we're just going to take it out of the pool. It's worth nothing. Okay, there you go, right? But that's the whole point of the portfolio. Some of them, even if it's only a third, will be in the money. As those liquidate and then get paid out in dividends, if you look at, therefore, well, what annual compensation will a fractional get relative to their market value if they got paid in cash? In other words, they're working with established companies, corporations who can pay them their cash value. Here, they will make 30 to 50% more than they would have had they gone and gotten all cash. But that will pay out typically over 5, 6, 7 years. But if you then redo it on an annual basis, and that is the compensation, that is the extra return they're getting for foregoing that cash for a number of years, foregoing at least part of that cash for a number of years.
Can you share an example story, people who've done this?
Well, I shared the story of a guy named Jose, and a fractional CFO, always worked with startups, formed a little team, and wasn't quite to the scale that we would recommend, but he was close. You know, he had 7, 8 clients, right? And his results were very similar to what I said. You know, out of those 7, 8, he had 2 that paid off, 1 in a small way, 1 in a material way. And he turned what would have been expected compensation as a CFO, let's call it 400,000 to 500,000. When you look back and said, so on a year-to-year equivalent, if I added back and allocated the cash reward that you got over those years, he was a little over $1 million a year that he made. Now, he deferred that for, in his case, about 4 years. Mm-hmm. So his liquidity event happened pretty early relative to what I would normally set as an expectation. But he got, you know, well over a 7-figure payout as a result of this liquidity event that, when you allocated it back on a year-to-year basis, put him materially ahead of what he would made at his market value, taking full cash, working for an established company. So, but it only worked for him because he set up this little portfolio. Otherwise, it would have been random chance. And it's like, you know, then he would have been the equivalent of buying a lottery ticket. You know, the old view of someone's got to win, it might as well be me, except it probably isn't. And you want to get away. And a lot of startups, when you're the entrepreneur, it's like a lottery. But now you're going away from a lottery to a calculated investment where you're now within the realm of a reasonable risk return trade-off.
Yeah. Right. not hope.
Not hope, right?
And so for the business owner who's utilizing this, they're giving away the same equity or upside that they would have been willing to give anyway, but now presumably more likely to be able to find talented people, experienced executives, fractional leaders, who would actually be willing because of this decreased risk to actually work with them and take on their startup as their project.
Right. And that, I think, is the key, because we see fractionals that want to serve the startup space right now in one of two groups. One group is they're making like half the money they should be making, and they're doing it because they love working with the startups, but they're looking at their runway and saying, I don't know how much longer I can do this. And the other group, they're the wannabes. They're looking and saying, I wish I could, and I feel like I'm wasting so much time because I keep telling them I'm $10,000 a month, and they keep looking at me like, we can pay you half. And they're not really disagreeing on the value. They're not disagreeing on the market rate. But as we all know, when you work in the startup world, early stage world, part of your compensation is deferred, and it's tied to the ultimate success of the business. And you can only play in that world if you're willing to buy into that compensation.
Right. Well, again, people who want to find executives like this, people who are executives or fractional leaders who want to maybe get in, join a group, find other like-minded people who want to try this model. Is that referabilitymaven.com? Is that
absolutely?
What should people do?
You know, they should get in touch with me. We'll have a nice conversation. We'll make it very relevant to their particular situation. We have people that we work with that group together based on the same function. So it could be we're a group of five fractional COOs that are pooling, but we also have industry groups, which is a very interesting twist. So we're interested in SaaS. We have a fractional COO, a fractional CFO, a fractional COO, fractional CHRO. So we all do different functions, but for the same types of clients. And so some of them can even, you know, refer business in effect to each other.
But hopefully not the same clients.
Because then you
because now
you're not managing your risk. And
right.
And by the way, what we do is just like a venture capitalist, there's an investment committee, the equivalent of investment committee. We call it the client committee.
But these are the same executives in the pod who evaluate each other's, hey, you want to engage with this company? You know, we all have to agree that that's somebody we want to mix our risk with.
Right. Because what you don't want to do is fool yourself into thinking you're diversifying your risk.
Right. Doing a lot of garbage.
or you're just multiplying, like, hey, I can get you in my client. Well, okay, you're not diversifying anymore.
Right. That's not diversity.
So there is a very solid management structure. But my point is only there are many different ways to play this as you put this little group together that can really tackle, just like a venture capital does. You know, they all have a certain space that they want to play in and that they become very knowledgeable in. Well, there's no difference here. Again, think of yourself when it comes to managing your portfolio, just like a venture capitalist, when they manage theirs, the difference is they're investing money, you're investing time. Otherwise, it's far more similar than it is different. And that's what we're helping them understand, how to use that model that is, I would argue, quite proven. So this isn't some harebrained, crazy idea. What it is, it's taking something that's well-established, well-understood, and proven, and saying, why don't we apply it to a different group of people that, if you look at it in the right way, actually have the same characteristics. They just use a different currency. Otherwise, it's very much the same.
Right. A new application. Yeah. Super, super, super interesting. I know I love this conversation. I love this topic. I love hearing from you on this because it is a novel. It's a novel application. You know, it's not, it's a very new topic. So again, business owner or, startup founders, fractional executives who want to work with startups. Reach out to Jay Kingley, referability maven, maven.com. And, or link through LinkedIn, whatever, a way to get in touch with you. But I appreciate you sharing this concept and this tool.
Thank you, Ben. It's been my honor.
Awesome. I appreciate it. And everybody else, we'll see you on the other side. Thanks for joining today.
You're listening to Win-Win, an entrepreneurial community with your host, Ben Wolf.